Hi there! It's me again. Thanks for clicking play. My name's Unkwa Sonia, and I'm back in my bag again. You can catch every episode Tuesdays, weekly. If we have an extended interview, those will come out Friday of the same week. You can find those episodes on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and Anchor. And you can always use the Anchor app to leave me a voice message, be a part of this show. It's something I missed talking about the last couple of episodes, but it's time to actually activate it and put it into use. If you want to ever join the conversation, I'm sort of easy to find on Twitter at @N_ASONYE, on Twitter, on Instagram, got my mediums mixed up, on Instagram, _sometimesJR, and as always, I'll give you my cell phone number. I'm just playing, it's none of your business. On today's episode, we talk more about the money, but not quite in the way you think. LeBron James, once again, takes over in a completely different medium. I have no idea what to think about Kanye, or maybe I will by the time this episode's over. And we're going to hear from Lauren, at least part of the interview with her this week. She dropped her EP just a few weeks ago, Cold Kingdom. You'll hear a little bit more about her and the trip to Philly this past weekend. Nevertheless, you've got the intro, so sit back, relax, and, well, just figure out what this next clip is.
As far as, giving freedom and justice and liberty to everybody. It's something that's not happening.
You know, I'm very privileged to have a platform like this because I feel like I can be more of myself. I can be unfiltered. I can tell you the truth. When I tell you that when the news for Colin Kaepernick came out, I could not help but laugh. This whole time, this supposed glorified backup quarterback is now signed to a superstar-level apparel deal with Nike. I was already a big Nike fan before this came out. Now, I don't think I'll wear anything but. I mean, when you look at the optics of the contract, it seems kind of weird. Nike's the official apparel manufacturer for the NFL, and yet they just signed its public enemy number one. Now, before you say that I'm being a little too dramatic about this, let's discuss. Colin Kaepernick just last week was granted a continuance by an arbitrator and a judge. When the NFL tried to throw out the case, they both said, nah, he's got a case here. Let's see it through. And now the NFL's supposed punishment for players speaking out looks a little bit paper thin. Granted, Colin Kaepernick has not been signed by a team. Likely won't be signed by a team. You don't necessarily sue your employer and then get your job back. That's not how it works. But what's interesting to me about this whole saga is that the NFL loves to tell its players and fans of any pigmentation that isn't the quote-unquote default that their opinions don't matter. You have a responsibility to your team, to your community, to put your uniform on, go in, play, go home. Stay out of trouble, don't have any fun, don't go to any strip clubs, Le'Veon Bell, and make sure that you are always on time, a consistent professional, blah, 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 blah. And yet, players can't be a part of the political conversation, but owners can. Doesn't anybody else find it interesting that in one of the supposed most liberal cities in the U.S., Seattle, their owner, Paul Allen, is putting up $100,000 of his own money to keep the Senate the way it is in Washington? Now, I'll be honest, this isn't a venue where I like to venture in and talk politics because, frankly, it irritates me. I won't ever proclaim to understand all of it, especially the intricacies, but the gist of politics, especially in this day and age, is that money talks. Said money from owners will pay players, and it's also their personal money that they have. So all the arguments that fans have against players who actually put their money into their charities, they're somehow very mum when Paul Allen can put his money on the line. Of course they can stay silent when Bill Bidwell endorses Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court appointment. But the players have a duty to their team. Give me a break. Give me a break. What's so funny about this to me is that not only has the NFL alienated the fans that were rooting for Kaepernick and everything that his protest stood for, they've managed to alienate the polar opposite of those fans. They can't win. They cannot win regarding this issue. They would have been better off leaving well enough alone, but Colin Kaepernick got them in their feelings. And it's funny because one of the best coaches I have ever been around, Jeff Weiss of Lawrence Woodmere Academy, would say one thing to his players all the time. I had the pleasure of being on staff for 3 years and Tuesday Chips. I just had to throw that in there. But he would say, don't get over-emotional with the game. Once you get over-emotional, you get beat. And the NFL's getting beat right now because the owners were in their feelings regarding Kaepernick. They were in their feelings regarding everything he stood for, and they were fueled by the countless fans who called Colin Kaepernick's protest something completely opposite of what it was. He has continually said what his protest was about. Fellow players have continually said what his protest was about. But the owners were in their feelings. They got Roger Goodell in their feelings. And they took all of those feelings, being worried about their bottom line, and look at where they are now. If the NFL Players Association was worth anything, it would be a lock, stock, and barrel win. But unfortunately, it's not. Unfortunately, it's not. But nevertheless, Colin Kaepernick having an apparel deal is hilarious and poetic. Because once again, the threat of being jobless, not being able to take care of one's family, well, Colin Kaepernick can now be mentioned in the same breath as Muhammad Ali. Until he was cut, and granted, part of that cut was because he thought he could get re-signed because he played pretty well that year. And usually in the NFL, regardless of what you do off the field, Greg Hardy, you get a chance to play when the time is right. Until you start talking about standing up for minorities in this country. Then, nope, you're too divisive. You're a glorified backup quarterback. Anyway, let me ask you a question. Since when do backup quarterbacks, rather, I'll put it this way. Since when do supposed overhyped backup quarterbacks break NFL records in the postseason? Green Bay loved seeing that Colin Kaepernick was out because he ended their season for 2 straight years. Colin Kaepernick took over a 49ers team who then, at the time in Alex Smith, had a top 10 quarterback. And he took him to the Super Bowl. Did they win? No, they did not. But the fact that they got there on his arm in the first place is remarkable. And if you can continue to give Trent Dilfer any credibility over him, I don't want to hear nothing about Colin Kaepernick being no glorified backup quarterback. Because then you're just proving that whatever eye test you seem to be taking, you need to throw it in the trash. I don't know what this line is going to look like, and I really hope that despite the inner workings of this deal, because Colin Kaepernick has been on the Nike roster since 2011. But I really hope that the design team is good, because as great of a ceremonial play as this is for Nike, because it is a money grab. Let's not play games here. Nike saw the momentum being back behind Serena since the French Open decided to run its mouth. Rather, the French Open's president. And they see, okay, you know what? People will back this. People will buy it. And you can guarantee that between all of the viral videos of fans burning one shirt or one pair of sneakers or pulling out whatever random Nike check and burning it or ripping it away or some faux ceremonial show of I'm never spending money there again, there are a bunch of black and brown kids saying, I want that. There are a bunch of young millennials like me or older millennials who are saying, the money may not be there, but when that comes, I'm going to get it. I'm mad I don't have a Colin Kaepernick jersey right now. But Nike has put the NFL in a weird position. Who would have thought that your apparel, your official apparel distributor, backs your public enemy number one? It's poetic justice if you think about it.
I got in an argument with an AAU mom.
What?
What?
A mother?
With a mother.
Lord have mercy.
Speaking of athletes using their platforms to create change or a different dialogue, let me just say this. I did not start out this decade being a fan of LeBron James. Now, I might be on the Stan bandwagon. Because at least in my lifetime, I don't think I have ever seen an athlete simultaneously use his platform to better his community and those around him and also live his best life. LeBron James being a Laker might be really the greatest story of this summer. Because in this summer, not only is he moving from Cleveland to LA, he has continued to make media ventures that, again, I'm not sure I remember an active athlete being so active in that regard. Executive producing and being in front of the camera and making sure that his team is central to said production. At a time when, trust me, there were a lot of people that did not like Maverick Carter and Rich Paul at the beginning of the decade. Because of the whole LeBron going to Miami thing, stories came out about, oh, he's a diva. Oh, he's not being agreeable with the team owner. LeBron knew what loyalty meant, and it's paying off literally and even more so figuratively. You see, I watched The Shop when it dropped, and my heart is honestly full. My heart is full because you see this group of people that he brings to the shop. They're not all they're mostly athletes, but you've got his man, his right-hand man, Maverick Carter there. You have Odell Beckham Jr. there. You have Draymond Green, who I can't believe said one of the realest things that episode. If you haven't watched it, here's a brief spoiler. One thing that Draymond said was, at some point throughout the last 4 years, you stood up and said, I'm here. It really doesn't matter what you think. I'm using a very sanitized version of what he said, but nevertheless, the message is still the same. But he didn't just have NBA players there. He had Odell Beckham there. He had Michael Bennett there. He didn't even have just athletes there. He had Jerrod Carmichael, John Stewart being the token white guy, which I get a real kick out of, by the way. And that's not even all. I think the only critique that I would have is that I'd like to see more women involved in the conversation. But, I mean, it's the barbershop. If you have any semblance of what being in a black barbershop is like, there aren't a lot of women there, just period. But having Candace Parker there and for her to have a presence at the table, I think that really meant something. Because she wasn't just speaking as an athlete, she was speaking as a mother. And her experience is, I would argue, more relevant to the overall conversation. I'm telling you, you have to go see the episode. It's really, really great. What was refreshing to me about it is that a lot of times when you see athletes in front of a camera, they feel forced to be this, I'll use the phrase again, the sanitized version of themselves. you know, they sit up, they make statements, you know, that are, you know, I'm doing the best I can for my team. I really want to just give back and this, that, and the third. It was nice to see everybody put their public faces down and just get mad and just talk. It's not something that we're very used to seeing. I'm still trying to get around the fact I thought LeBron James was the salt of the earth and he didn't really curse like that. Okay, I'm kind of lying. I mean, you figure everybody swears once in a while, but it was just like, whoa, everybody's really comfortable. Everybody's really letting it hang out. And people take for granted how precious that is. And being in front of a camera is nerve-wracking at any rate. But to be yourself in front of a camera, whew. The weirdest thing one can do, whether it's audio or video, is to record yourself, try not to pay too much mind, and then hear it back. Like when it comes to these episodes, I do all of the editing myself. I don't really ship it anywhere. I do the mixing. I bought the equipment, all that sort of stuff. The performance you're going to hear at the end of the episode, I mixed it myself, did all the effects and whatnot just to try and make it sound pretty nice. If you have any critiques, I'll take it. But that all of that is to say, I am still getting used to how my voice sounds on a recording. And those men and women were in front of a camera and were themselves. It helps that they're at the position they're at now, because to tell you what, I can't do that right now. And a lot of people that wish they could have a show like that right now where they get to bring their whole professional and family profiles behind it. There's a lot of people that can't do that, but they did. And they had a lot of thought-provoking conversations, a lot of interesting things to say, especially when it came to, and here's an exchange that is worth looking at. Michael Bennett and Draymond Green had a nice back and forth about what it meant for an athlete to be representative for his or her community in terms of big racial issues, like the Trayvon Martin thing. LeBron alluded to that. But Draymond said something very interesting. He said, it's not an athlete's responsibility to be a spokesperson for their community. And in a sense, he's right. Because these public figures already have a lot on their plate. And it's a lot for them to all of a sudden have to risk it. For what? But then Michael Bennett and LeBron James made the important rebuttal out argument that at a certain point, it's bigger than yourself. What else can you bring to better those around you? Because I'll tell you what, LeBron James is doing as an athlete is going to break so many more barriers than you realize right now. Honestly, journalism as a whole is going to change because of it. Because at a certain point, especially if public figures are really upset about the way they're being portrayed, they'll stop talking to the reporters and they'll make their own stuff. LeBron already started doing it with Uninterrupted. All of these artists are having Beats 1 radio channels. Look at Nicki Minaj. She's memed everywhere, but it's her platform. You're starting to see the creators take their narrative into their own hands. And it's a very weird place to be, no matter what opinion you have on LeBron's thoughts or even venturing out into this medium. But there's one thing that I do know, and there's one thing that I do take into account. It's that when you come to grips with the sheer fact that nobody is going to really love you, or better yet, the vast appeal that you shoot for where everybody loves you, the moment you realize that that's never going to happen, and you get more and more comfortable with yourself, that's when things really start to happen. And I want to encourage you with that, even if you don't like LeBron James at all. He's an example of somebody who is honestly living his best life and being more and more of himself while understanding that there aren't a lot of people who are going to like it. And he's okay with that. So make sure no matter what walk of life you're from, that you're okay with yourself too. Because that matters.
I guess that's why I'm here and I can't come back home. And guess when I heard that, when I was back home.
Just when you think that Kanye West actually gets it. Yeah, no. No, no, no. You see, I didn't even know that he went to go to WGCI back in his hometown of Chicago to do a two-part interview. But I caught a clip of the interview online, caught a bit of the rest of it, and the first part was very sort of apologetic. He was very emotional. The hosts, it was a three-person show. They were all from Chicago. I could tell it was a very emotional moment for them, too, because when one of the most controversial yet biggest musical minds of this generation comes from your hometown, it's huge. And he repped Chicago heavy. From the college dropout, even all the way through to Watch the Throne. But I almost felt as if their emotions got the better of them in that first part, because nothing's really changed. What he apologized for was the fact that people were hurt by what he said, and it realized it meant that people really weren't messing with him, and all of that sort of stuff. It feels like a very Cliff Notes version. I encourage you to go find the interview, because people have different thoughts about it. Some people were encouraged that, oh my goodness, he's seeing the light, and others were like, this is a ratings grab because his album didn't do so well. For the record, it opened up at iTunes number one for about 2-3 weeks after it even came out. But nevertheless, it kind of hurts, because the old Kanye was never coming back. Nah, the old Kanye was never coming back. No matter how much he cried, no matter how much he says he wants to be a part of Chicago and be back home. First off, he's part of the Kardashian machine now, which means all bets are off in terms of what that impact is going to mean for Chicago in the first place. Secondly, his music is just different. I didn't listen to this latest album he put out. I did that on purpose. I was absolutely not going to patronize that in any way, shape, or form. But the soul is lost from his music. And I'm not just talking about the production choice. We always knew that Kanye West was off the wall. He was different. You can't be that genius and not be a little off somewhere. Like this again, this is a dude that took a choir song and made it into a hit on his first album, after labels actually told him that the song was trash. If you're any of those ARs, how dumb do you sound? For the record, you really passed up on Jesus Walks. It's pretty funny. This is also a man that consistently sampled legends, consistently sampled deep cuts. This man took a Steely Dan song and flipped it into a celebratory bop. The song that you heard to open up this segment had Chris Martin playing the same arpeggio over and over and over again. Progression, I should say, actually. Played the same progression over and over again. And that was an integral part of a song that just had a kick and like a tambourine. That's genius. So that doesn't mean that he's going to be cookie cutter like everyone else, but in stark contrast to LeBron James, it feels like he lost part of himself. And this is not a new argument. This isn't a new idea. But that interview with WGCI, where he still backs up that he has a direct line to the president, this same president whom we have seen only uses black and brown people as photo ops and ornaments. I'll bet all those pastors that sat at the table with him are pretty pissed about that whole prison reform thing that he pulled from the table. But Kanye West seems to think that having a direct line to him will mean good things for Chicago, a consistent punchline for this administration. It's confusing. Can't call it unexpected, but it really is confusing because it's like, my goodness. Like, how wrapped up can you be? And we have our answer. He's wrapped up in it, lock, stock, and barrel. And it's sad because I would have liked to see the light at the end of the tunnel for Kanye West. I would love to see an evolution of his thinking, of his ideas, of not trying to just shock and really hurt the same people that looked up to you just for the sake of pushing a new record. It'd be nice to get back to that. And that even doesn't necessarily mean that he has to think the same as everybody else. We've already addressed that he doesn't. But taking into account why people feel the way they feel and coupling that with where you came from is what made Kanye West so great in the first place. So the old Kanye may never come back, but I guess we'll settle for glimpses.
I pledge allegiance to all the scramblers. This is the Star Spangled Banner. King.
Now, before we get to the interview with Lauren, I want to say this about this past weekend. Made in America, I see why it's such a big deal. You have people from all walks of life that come through with so many musical sets on so many different stages. I have learned that it isn't quite for me. But that is literally only because there are so many people. You may be saying, well, what did you expect? Well, of course I expected it, but being in the middle of it is a whole different ballgame. But I tell you what, two acts caught my attention. They went back to back. And Kendrick's always great. Of course Kendrick is always great. But Janelle Monáe and Meek Mill going back to back, albeit on different stages, was awesome. Now, even though Meek Mill went last, I'm going to start with his set first because I haven't caught up on a lot of his new music, admittedly. Maybe you can attribute some of that to the Drake Meek Mill beef. Judge me, I don't care. But also because it was just like, I'm musically, I was sort of looking for different things. But I revisited some of, we're talking wins and losses and even the 4-track EP that he put out. And I was very, very impressed. Like, it's still the same delivery, but the production behind him has changed. And I even heard it live. I mean, he still did that thing that a lot of performers do where they rap with the same studio track instead of going to a straight instrumental. I already know what the track sounds like. I don't want to hear you in time with that. I want to hear you all alone. But that's a whole nother story. It was really cool to see Meek Mill back on stage, back in his hometown. Like, you could tell that he just felt comfortable. And I know he talked about it ever since he was released, but his announcement that he was going to be focusing more on social justice, it's really cool, and it ties into what a good portion of this episode has been about. You've got people using their platforms and the things that they went through to make the world a better place. I have no clue how he's going to go about it, but the fact that that's going to be a point for him throughout, I'm rooting for him, and I hope that it does well. And all of that around the fact that his set was really energetic and really fun, and I had fun rocking out to House Party, hey, he really did that. But let's talk about Janelle Monáe. Y'all need to put some respect on this woman's name. As a performer, she is out of this world. Sometimes people take for granted with even somebody like a Beyonce, how hard it is to hold a pitch while being in constant motion. And Janelle Monae did not miss a beat. Furthermore, I know that there are a lot of comparisons to Prince. She mentions Prince as a mentor. He was on the first track of the Electric Lady album. That's all well and good. But homegirl put on a real deal show with odes to Michael Jackson and James Brown. When it came to Tightrope, it seems like she ends, when I saw her a couple years ago, she seems to end all of her sets with Tightrope. Baby, whether you're high or low, you gotta tip on the tightrope. Yeah, that one. She always ends it with like the James Brown finish. One time for the tightrope, bop, just motioning the band. And I'm telling you, you gotta find tape of it. You've gotta see it live. But hearing all of that, coupled with the performance aspect, having her dancers be in sync, and she just looked like she was having a good time. That is such an underrated part of performance. You can sing your behind off as well as the best of them, but if you don't even look like you're enjoying yourself, I don't want to watch you. And I'll be mad that I paid money to watch you, because those tickets were not cheap. But with her, it was like, okay, I feel like I got my money's worth. I'm all good now. I'm full. I'm satisfied. But I tip my hat to Janelle Monae. She has consistently put out work that makes you think and is really daggone good too. Dirty Computers, it dropped back in March, I want to say. There's some bops on there. I know Make Me Feel made the radio. I don't really listen to the radio much anyway, but I know Make Me Feel was one of the first singles. Django Jane, sheesh, hearing that live was wild. Because there aren't a lot of singers who can actually rap. Because even though both of them require sets of, you know, mental muscle memory and controlling your breath and things of that nature, it's hard to do both. And it's hard to do both well. She still had expression in her voice. She still was able to attack. I could understand every word. That doesn't happen with most singers. And she did it in both mediums. I'm going to try to stop standing, but that part of Made in America made my entire weekend worth it. Oh, and my date was pretty hot too. But anyway, to our interview. So before I caught up with Lauren at Made in America, something was sort of racking my brain. Where I was staying, I got a chance to talk to the person that was working at the front desk. And she was a Beyonce fan. I would still consider myself a Jay-Z stan. And there was something that was really toying with me a little bit. Maybe that's because I listen to The Read too much. Maybe it's because I like it when surprises happen. But I was thinking that maybe Beyonce and Jay would pull up. Because in my mind, I wasn't really impressed with the headliners. Outside of Meek Mill, like, no. And then Kendrick came along. I was like, oh, okay. So there's kind of a reason to go now. So I was thinking it might be a situation where the Carters may pull up. And I couldn't resist because I toyed around with it. I asked other people. So, of course, I had to ask my guest. Now, Lauren is a very talented individual, not just an artist, but an entrepreneur and an author, too. Here's part one of what we talked about. And again, you'll have to excuse my question, but I felt like it was important to ask. All right. So we're in Philadelphia.
Yay.
We're at Made in America.
Yes.
Question number one has to be, do you think the Carters are pulling up tonight?
I mean, are they in America? I mean, the thing is, you really don't know because they can be anywhere in the world at any point. So they've definitely been before. So it might be one of those years where they're just like, we know that our property is good. We don't have to check on it this year. But at the same time, like, who are some of the like main acts that...
So the headliners...
Because if they're like friends with a few of those, that they'll definitely be there.
Now, here's what's interesting, because I was actually looking at the tour schedule just mm-hmm. because I was curious. And yeah. I'm a big Jay-Z fan. Well, a little less after Lemonade. But
oh, dang.
But... But what was interesting that they don't go back on tour until September 11th.
Mm.
And the headliners this year, in my opinion, it's not a strong
But Kendrick,
slate.
Isn't Kendrick here?
Kendrick saved it.
So then they might be here just because they're like, they respect Kendrick.
Okay, so that means Sunday night's the time to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means that the two headliners aside from them are Post Malone and Nicki Minaj.
Mm-hmm.
And then Meek
and
Mill.
And Beyonce is like, tight with Nicki, even if there's like issues. I feel like they're those kinds of like pop star industry friends where it's like, I respect your hustle.
I guess that's a good way.
So I could see them being here just because of that.
Okay, well,
yeah,
fingers crossed for all the ticket buyers. Now to on more regular, more relevant news, I should say.
Okay,
you wear so many different hats.
Mm-hmm.
You're an author.
Oh, we should tell them what my name is.
By this time they know, but why don't you tell us about your stage name, which mm-hmm. is which is still pronounced Lauren, right?
It's still pronounced Lauren. It's just spelled differently.
Why?
Because I want to be myself. It's a bit like Will Smith in The Fresh Prince choosing his character as Will. His name is Willard, but the character was William, but people know him still as Will. And I figure if you're going to know me one way, it should still sound the same.
I feel that.
Yeah.
Does your alter ego, because I feel like when people make a move like that,
yeah.
there's an alter ego that they're looking for.
Yeah.
So does your alter ego do something a little bit different from you in real life?
Well, Lauren, L-O-R-E-N, is I would say she's just a more intense version of me. She's the me that
she's more intense.
Yeah. She's the imagine look shocked. But yeah, I think she's a much more she's just me without a whole lot of filter, because I think there's a lot of people will tell you as like a female and as a human, you know, you're doing too much or you're too much like this or whatever. But she doesn't care. She's a bit like me in business though, because I'm also quite, once it's about, you know, if it's my book, Rafe and Rose, the Death Letter, or if it's
gotta
about,
let me get there.
You know, I just plug things. I'm a good plugger. So if it's about that, or if it's about, you know, Argon or something, and I feel that there's any kind of, you know, misunderstanding of my vision, I get really protective. And I think she's someone who just doesn't hide her aggressive or protective side.
So you wear so many different hats.
Mm-hmm.
You are in tech. You mentioned your company, Argon, mm-hmm. that you run with Papa Dearest.
Mm-hmm.
You are also an author of mm-hmm. Rafe and Rose, The Death Letter. I was going to say it. And you have also dropped your new EP. Out of those hats that you wear. And
called The Cold Kingdom.
Goodness sake.
Listen, you didn't say it. It seemed like the appropriate time.
Uh-huh. Of the hats that you wear, do you have a favorite?
I think right now the music is my favorite, but I think that's just because it's the most personal. I think that's normal.
Tell me about where Cold Kingdom came from as the title for an album.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know how people say, like, as an artist, like Picasso had his blue period and Kanye had basically everything around 808s and then kind of that dark, twisted, et cetera, et cetera. I think, when you're in the process of building something, you kind of have that heaviness and things feel a little cold because you're building and things aren't where you want them to be. And so, you know, that plus watching like a bunch of shows about like the medieval times and things like that kind of came together. And, you know, America was, at the time I was writing, it was in a much better place, but it just feels like right now too, it was so fitting to keep that name Cold Kingdom because it's become a lot colder to a lot of people.
Now, your musical taste has always been pretty eclectic for as long as I have known you. For those who see you and go, oh, wow, this looks like it could be really cool, and they press play and they're going to be both shocked and also like, this is really cool.
Okay, good. I was like, please be positive, Sean.
No, it was going to be positive because I'll admit the first time I heard it, I was like, I remember looking at you like, did you do this?
Yeah, your face was really like, your mouth was open. Your jaw dropped the whole, and was like that for like a
minute. Yeah, the whole song.
Yeah.
And then I was like, this is amazing, but I would never have expected it. So
What did you expect? What do I like look like?
See, that's a very good question because it also depends on one's personal listening experience.
Right.
I am very much into hip hop, jazz, R&B. You would call it this very stereotypical black sound, but Stephen Curtis Chapman is also one of my favorite artists. So
yeah, I grew up on him
little,
too.
My little CCM moment.
Yeah, you know.
So I was thinking it might have been a slight mix of that, and it was none of that, which was as terrifying as like, is my black card going to get pulled for liking this? I don't understand.
Oh my gosh.
But it's also very good work. So yeah.
No, your black card won't get pulled if you're connected to excellence.
Boom. I like that you said that. Yeah. So I want to know a little bit more about the process itself because people sort of think songwriting, you sit down, you write down words, you give to someone who knows to play the piano or whatever other instrument. Ta-da, it's done.
Yeah.
How does it really work?
Songwriting, it's a little bit of staring at a piece of paper, looking at the other person if you're working with somebody. I got the chance to work with three really great writers, John Storr, Jamion Williams, and Aaron Rauch. And it was a little bit of kind of sitting and I'd say, well, these are the things I'm thinking or feeling. This is kind of what I want to write about. Or I might've had an idea. A lot of them, I pretty much came in with the songs like half baked. And so then they would kind of pull their own, you know, style into it. So sometimes we would go, while I was out in, I recorded this in Tennessee. So while I was out, there, we'd go on to the back porch and basically stare off into just trees and like, cause there's a pretty nice backyard situation. Just write on the patio with a pad of paper and think. And, so it depends on who you're working with, but I think it's a lot of just feeling really vulnerable and writing things down that you think might sound like crap. Yeah.
I mean,
they don't.
Yeah. Like when you're a perfectionist, that's sort of what it is.
Yeah.
Why now?
Why now, as in why?
Not just why did you release it now, but what made you actually want to foray into your artistry?
Yeah. I think there was I always wanted to. So, you know, it was more a question of, you know, when, not if. And definitely now, because I felt like the industry can be a little bit, not to get too woke, but it can be a little bit sexist. And there is kind of this age range where new female artists are allowed to be interesting and mainstream, and I didn't want to wait another 4 years. And then I think also it just felt, because of again Cold Kingdom, like this concept of America kind of feeling a little cold to a lot of its, you know, potential citizens and citizens, it felt like it fit the time.
You can catch the rest of my sit down with Lauren when the full interview drops on Friday. Listen, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I really appreciate every play, every retweet, every show of support. I'll be honest, when this started, I felt like I was going to get maybe three listeners like myself, my mom, and maybe my lady. But instead, it's been a lot more than that, and I've really been grateful for it. Please feel free to share, forward it. You send it to one person, they'll send it to somebody else. You know, let's try to make this a thing. It's really, really a great chance to be heard. If you do want to be on, if you want to reach out, be a part of the show, here's how you can do that. You can follow me on Twitter, @_ASONYE, on Instagram, _sometimesJR. Reach out in the DMs. Let's talk, especially if you're an artist or a creative and you got stuff that you want to talk about. I'd be glad to bring you in and we can talk. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts. Rate us 5 stars. Leave a review. It would go a long way. Also active on Podbean and on Anchor. Now, Anchor has this really cool feature on the app. It allows you to leave little voice messages. Leave me one. I just might put it on the show, whether it's good or bad. But then again, it's all at my discretion. So, and big shout out to Anchor for doing the 24-hour podcast with Warren Burt Brown to raise money for his organization. I'm glad that they met the goal, and it's all great. And Rembert may never remember this, but the one time I was with him and Clayton Yates, he stole part of my mac and cheese. And I kind of want that back. I want my retribution. But anyway, thank you so much for tuning into the show. And listen, instead of a quote this week, I'd rather send you out with a song. One of the singles from Lauren's EP, Cold Kingdom. Here's Crystals to take us home. Thanks again. See you next week.
Why do you only hear when we're fighting? I question what is the worth in trying. Your heart inside is as cold as ice, and I can't see why. Tell me how you can stand and watch them die. We're always like this. Crystals bursting into flame. Crystals bursting into flame. We try and try to communicate. We just explode crystals. They strike and twist the knife in. After all these years, our words remain so biting. Tortured by your cutting glare, my anger flares. If you take me down, I'll bring you with me fighting. We're always like this. Crystals bursting into flame. Crystals bursting into flame. We try and try to communicate. We just it's always like this. I'll do what you say. Fire draws near. We'll burn anyway. Crystals bursting into flame. Crystals bursting into flame. We try and try to communicate. We just explode crystals.